Okay. So this is the thermal history of the universe with the CMB 300,000 years after the Big Bang. And we usually think of it as probing these early times in the universe, so inflationary fluctuations and the evolution of adiabatic perturbations up to this point. But with the current generation of high-resolution CMB experiments, we're now able to observe the gravitational lensing effect on the CMB that's imparted as it travels through the entire observable universe to us at redshift of zero. So what I'm going to talk about today is the measurement of that effect with Planck. We've been able to do it better than anyone else has before. So just as an illustration of what's going on and to give a sort of intuitive picture, I'm going to start by cutting out a little patch right here at redshift of zero from this dark matter distribution. It's about 300 megaparsecs in size, and the last scattering surface is 14,000 megaparsecs away, so there are about 50 patches like this between ourselves and the CMB. Now if we pass photons through this map, so going from the left side, maybe to the right side of the image where we're observing them, they don't travel in straight lines. And the reason is because the universe has little curvatures imparted by the energy density of matter. And these straight lines are not geodesics, which photons travel along. I apologize for the 3D animation. I took the train down here. It's 9 hours long. They have power, but not wireless, which is a perfect recipe for overzealous PowerPoint slides. So if you draw the actual geodesics on this map and then rotate back up, this is the last one, I promise, you see something like this. So around large agglomerations of matter, the geodesics are bent. And the observable effect is that if you're sitting here observing photons from this point of the sky, they come at you at a slightly different angle than you would have if matter didn't do this. So here's the 3D picture of that. You've got CMB photons propagating to us from the last scattering surface. We're sitting here with Planck, and we observe them. And the overall effect is described as a remapping of the fluctuations. So when we're looking in direction N on the sky, we're actually looking at a displaced direction on the last scattering surface. And the displacement is given by this deflection vector, which is the gradient of a lensing potential. And that's made up of a geometrical term and gravitational potentials and an integral from ourselves back to the last scattering surface. So this lensing potential probes a sort of integrated measure of gravitational potentials weighted by a geometrical term that sort of gives most of the sensitivity to structures that are halfway back to the last scattering surface. So the lensing potential has a power spectrum. Here it's plotted as a function of scale. You can sort of understand this power spectrum using this intuition that I think Anthony first wrote down. So if you look, first of all, at L equals 1, there's a very large velocity dipole. This isn't lensing due to large-scale structure, but it's the fact that we're moving with respect to the last scattering surface. So the lines of sight are slightly aberrated, just like, you know, when you go into warp mode on Star Trek. Things that are in the velocity direction get pushed towards our line of sight, and things that are further away get enlarged. This thing has an RMS deflection of about 3 arc minutes, so it's much larger than deflections expected from large-scale structure. concentrated in a single mode. And then the rest of this plot is the actual lenses that intercede between ourselves and last scattering. So they have this characteristic scale given sort of by the distance between the bright blotches in the 300 megaparsec slice through the Millennium simulation that I showed earlier. And because that geometrical term gives most of the weight to things that are halfway to the last scattering surface, those sorts of structures extend over about 2 degrees. So you have coherent deflections over scales of about 2 degrees with an RMS of about 2.5 arc minutes. And then on small scales, you start to have to incorporate nonlinear effects into your understanding of the power spectrum. But it's really only above L of 1,000, which you'll see we don't probe very well with Planck, so this linear treatment is good. And you're also averaging over a bunch of these structures along the line of sight. So even though to get the power spectrum right, you need to include nonlinear corrections, Gaussian is still a fairly good approximation for the lensing potential. Okay, so we're going to try to measure the lensing potential using the Planck CMB math. But these small deflections create very subtle effects. So if you blink between a lensed and unlensed CMB, there's a little hamster dance. You can see, if I'd just shown you one of these images, you wouldn't have been able to tell which was lensed and which was unlensed. So how do we go about reconstructing the lensing potential from these maps, given that it's such a small effect? So the observable effect isn't the lensing potential itself. We don't know what the last scattering surface looks like, so you can displace it however you want, and that will never be observable. So the thing that we're sensitive to is the change in the deflection vector over the sky, which is the Hessian of the lensing potential. You can break it down into these convergence and shear modes that are usually used in galaxy lensing, right? And a convergence mode corresponds to something that's shrinking or enlarging the fluctuations, whereas the shear modes correspond to a deflection which is sort of shrinking them in one direction and expanding them in another. So what you could imagine doing is looking at a patch of the sky and trying to measure the convergence, right? So if you have a positive or negative convergence, you're locally changing the angular scale. So if you took the CMB power spectrum, the way that you would do lensing is you would just expand it or contract it by shrinking or enlarging the x-axis. And that sort of moves the peak positions around a little bit. So you could expect, by taking the power spectrum on a patch and looking for this change in the power spectrum, to try and measure kappa. And you can do the same thing with the shear modes, except that now, instead of looking for a sort of circularly isotropized power spectrum, you're looking for something where the power spectrum shifts along the x-axis in one direction and contracts along the other. In practice, we do a slightly more complicated thing, which makes it easier to construct an optimal estimator for this effect. So if you write down the covariance matrix of the lens CMB fluctuations, they pick up this term which is proportional to the lensing potential. And what we do is we basically do an integral over the covariance matrix of the data, weighted by this template for the covariance induced by lensing. So it's kind of like a matched filter. We don't necessarily have to use the optimal matched filter here, although we do for our fiducial results. We also use different versions of this filter in order to test our sensitivity to various systematic effects. You also see lensing, not at first order in kappa, but now at second order, in the power spectrum of the temperature fluctuations. So the lenses are shrinking and expanding the acoustic peak scale, and that tends to, when you average over the sky, fill in the peaks that you would have in the unlensed temperature power spectrum. That's usually gauged in the data by this parameter A lens, which you just use to adjust the amplitude of this smearing effect. So A lens equals 1 corresponds to the amplitude we expect in lambda CDM for a fiducial model. And you know, if you tweaked it up to a factor of 8 or so, you would just be seeing a dramatic smoothing of the peaks. Okay, so lensing is currently a field of very active developments. So especially in the last 2 years, following this pioneering work by people like Hendrik and Chris, detecting the lensing effects in cross-correlation with external tracers of large-scale structure. We've finally gotten to the point where you can actually measure lensing with high statistical significance internally to the CMB, either through this peak smearing effect or through this reconstruction of the lenses themselves. So up until the Planck release, we had a bunch of significant detections of lensing, sort of at the 4 to 8 sigma level, depending on what tracer you were using to measure the lensing effects. And Planck has really pushed that forward. So the lensing results that I'll talk about today are primarily this 25 sigma detection from the lens reconstruction. We also have 10 sigma detection of lensing from the peak smearing in the power spectrum. And similar orders of detections of cross correlations with external galaxy surveys, et cetera. And there's also this booming cross correlation between the Planck lensing potential and the infrared background fluctuations that I think Olivier and Elaine will talk about in more detail later. Okay, so we have 9 Planck frequency bands. There is a best guess CMB map. We can feed that through this lens reconstruction procedure, and we obtain this beautiful map of the lensing potential. So nominally, this is a map of all of the matter in the observable universe back to the last scattering surface with some weight. So in this color scheme, I think dark regions correspond to low mass, white regions correspond to high mass regions. And you're supposed to be looking at a picture of mass throughout the entire universe. So I want to pause and enjoy this plot before I tell you how noisy it is. If you make a map of the Earth, it has recognizable features. If you then filter it so that it has the same power spectrum as the lensing potential after filtering with our reconstruction, you get a map like this. Right? So it's still recognizably the Earth. You won't see the Marianas Trench anymore, but all of the continents are there. Now if you add noise to this map, this is what you get. So the Planck lensing map is noise dominated on every scale. Our best signal to noise on a single mode is about a factor of a half. There will be visual correlations between the truth when somebody actually measures it and the Planck lensing map. You will see the Indian Ocean. You will see South America. You will be surprised to discover that Antarctica exists. Right? But you'll be able to pick out by eye correlations between the Planck lensing map and the truth. So we like to think of this as a sort of Kobe of lensing. It's the first map over the full sky. It's noisy, but you wouldn't say that's a bad idea. Okay, so here is a description of that map in more quantitative terms. these are our noise levels. So we have 3 frequency bands that are sort of have high enough resolution and low enough noise levels to be sensitive to lensing. And we also can combine them to get a minimum variance result, which is this black curve. So these noise levels are the power spectrum, or sorry, the variance of the reconstruction as a function of scale, just compared to the lensing potentials that we're trying to reconstruct. So the best signal to noise is around here, and it's a factor of a half. This is the error budget. So unlike measuring the CMB, a big chunk of the noise for reconstructing lenses is statistical. It comes from the fact that we only have one CMB to observe, and we don't know what the primordial CMB fluctuations in that realization looked like. So by averaging over a lot of them, we beat down the shape noise. But it's still a major part of our error budget. So those are these curves up here. About half of our lensing variance is due to this CMB shape noise. And the rest is due to combinations of CMB fluctuations and actual instrumental noise, and then foreground power. And the ratio between them sort of depends on frequency. So we can take our measurement of the lensing potential, take its power spectrum, remove the noise bias, or an estimate of the noise bias. And this is our measurement of the lensing potential power spectrum. So this is about a 25 sigma measurement if you condense it down to a single amplitude. On here is plotted all three frequency bands, as well as the minimum variance combination that we use for most of our analysis. You can see, for example, 100 gigahertz by itself is a 10 sigma detection of lensing, which is better than any previously published result. But we don't actually use it for anything, right? So the power of Planck for statistically detecting lensing is considerable, even if the map itself is quite noisy. And that's because we measure a large number of modes. So there are a bunch of technical things that I'll skip through. That's the part of lensing that I enjoy, but nobody else seems to. They all sort of connect to our efforts to validate this measurement of the lensing power spectrum. So this slide contains a fair subset of the consistency tests that we've done. In almost all cases, right, we get something fairly consistent with our fiducial power spectrum. So this plot, for example, is a test using three independent pipelines to measure the lensing potential, right? So this is testing for bugs or problems in the fiducial methodology that we use. And they're all very consistent. And this plot contains tests using various foreground separated maps, frequency combinations, these bias hardened estimators that are designed to test our sensitivity to some low L effects, different sky fractions, different treatment of point sources, the flux cut that we use, etc. So one thing I just want to mention briefly is this test, which is using these bias hardened estimators. So if you look at the power spectrum of the lensing potential at low L, there are a bunch of corrections that you have to make. The mask that you apply, the inhomogeneous noise due to the scan strategy, the beam asymmetries, all of these things can mimic lensing to some extent. They provide biases that you have to correct for. These are the biases, or these are the power spectra associated with those biases, so what we would get if we didn't correct for them, right? And especially at low L, maybe L of less than 10, there are several orders of magnitude sometimes above the signal that we're looking for, which is a big worry. So based on some tests that we've done with these bias hardened estimators that can remove some of these effects, we don't really trust L of less than 10 at a detailed level. So if you see anything involving large scale lensing in the Planck data, you should be careful of how well these things have been treated. This sort of carries over to all other estimators of statistical anisotropy as well. It's just very difficult to get the large scales very well because of these mean fields. the situation's not terrible, though. So even at L of less than 10, where we decided we don't really trust our lensing reconstruction, you can see, for example, if we had not corrected for beam asymmetries, we would have large effects at 1217 gigahertz compared to the sort of fiducial power spectrum that we expect to measure. But in the real data, we do correct for beam asymmetries, you know, and these mean fields go away. So I found this kind of reassuring. So even though we don't trust these modes, they're not all that bad. So Joe has already talked in better detail than I can about parameter constraints from lensing. 10 minutes? Oh, good. This is the same power spectrum measurement that I showed earlier, but now binned into 8 bins. The motivation for this is that people like Joe can show plots of the power spectrum without upstaging the lensing presentations that come later, because they look a lot less impressive when they're in 8 bins instead of 15. If you take the Planck temperature only chains and plot the lensing potential associated with samples of them, you can see that within the region that our error bars probe, we have sensitivity to parameters that affect the lensing power spectrum in ways that maybe the temperature power spectrum is less sensitive to. So the shining example is this breaking of the geometrical degeneracy. Lensing really gives you a new lever arm from the CMB alone on the low redshift universe. So with WMAP data, as Joe said, this degeneracy extended almost to, for example, omega lambda equals zero. Now with the Planck TT power spectrum, because we have 10 sigma measurement of lensing effects, that's no longer the case. But again, when you throw in this 25 sigma measurement from the lensing reconstruction, the geometrical degeneracy is essentially gone. Lensing with Planck is also, for the first time, at the sort of level where it can start to inform optical depth constraints, although not at the level that it would need to be remotely competitive with low or large-scale polarization. But it's still neat, you know, so there's this degeneracy in the primary CMB between the overall amplitude of the fluctuations and how much they have been scattered from the line of sight. Lensing gives you information on that overall amplitude in a geometrical way and allows you to sort of tighten your constraints on the optical depth. There are some mysteries in the first Planck release that we should watch for in the next one. In particular, if you include this A lens parameter in the temperature power spectrum likelihood, ignoring the lens reconstruction, you measure a value which is somewhat high compared to the theoretical expectation of one. So the temperature power spectrum is sort of preferring more peak smearing than we expect. And that's related to the high omega matter. It's also related to some of the discrepancies between low L and high L. It's one of those things that it's difficult to talk about in any definitive terms, right? The reconstruction, this 25 sigma thing, is preferring an amplitude which is much lower. So that leads to some funny, unexpected parameter results. If you include lens reconstruction in constraints on neutrino mass, your 95% confidence limits actually move up, because relative to the temperature likelihood, this low value of A lens from the lensing reconstruction is getting interpreted as some preference, some mild preference for higher neutrino mass. So I don't think there's a complete story yet, but it's something to watch for the next release. We can also measure cross correlations between our lensing potential and other tracers of the gravitational potential. So there are several of these within Planck itself. A nice one is this correlation between the lensing potential and the integrated Sachs-Wolfe effect. So at low multipoles, there's some temperature fluctuations induced by the evolution of potentials along the line, or the decay of potentials induced by dark energy as they travel to us. And it's the same potentials which lends the CMB. So if you form a cross spectrum between the low L temperature and the phi reconstruction, that works out to be the same as these bispectrum estimators for the lensing ISW bispectrum. This is the skew CL approach, okay, that James was talking about earlier. So if you sum over this cross spectrum, you can measure an amplitude of the lensing ISW bispectrum, and we sort of detected it, depending on which estimator you use, 2.5 to 2.6 sigma. I was kind of interested in this as it's potentially another handle on the large scale temperature anomalies. So you've measured an independent large, or a semi-independent probe of large temperature multipoles. So you could, in that cross correlation, look, for example, for differences between odd and even multipoles. So if you break this lensing ISW amplitude into contributions from odd or even multipoles here on this short leg, you actually see strikingly large differences between odd and even L, but not statistically significant, right? Just like everything else. So there might be other things that you could use this for. I think it's just reflecting, right, the odd even asymmetry in the temperature itself. You can also cross correlate the Planck lensing map with the infrared background probed by the higher frequency Planck channels, or with external tracers like galaxy surveys. Here are several representative ones that we tried with a range of different redshift distributions. They're all at much lower redshifts than this Z(2) that you normally associate with the lensing potential. But we see significant correlations for all of them, sort of at the generally 10 to 20 sigma level. Our lensing map is public, which is, so the primary reason why we show these cross correlations is more as an advertisement than anything else. So you can take the lensing map and do this for yourself, and it gives you a way to probe the relationship between whatever tracer you have in the underlying dark matter distribution. Lensing touches, at this point, a large fraction of the early Planck results, or of the March Planck results. Well, it's sort of characteristic of the fact that we're in a regime now where every CMB experiment is either a lensing survey in disguise, or is limited by lensing in some way. Planck is really currently at the forefront of this push of CMB into lensing. With the full mission and polarization, our error bars will tighten significantly. So you can expect in a year or two a sort of sub 3% measurement of the amplitude of this phi power spectrum. There's a 1.5% measurement of the amplitude of matter fluctuation. And I'll close on the lensing map.
Question?
I'm speaking too often, but did I get it right that lensing would like to have a somewhat larger power for structure. And lower. This morning we had we heard that actually the direct observation would like to have a little smaller sigma 8 than the one that would be preferred by the temperature. Is that the right view?
So
maybe it's not very significant, but at least that's what I noted.
So So the lensing can mean two things, and it depends on who you're talking to, which one. So you mean lensing in the temperature power spectrum or the lens reconstruction? It's somewhat lower.
Somewhat lower.
Somewhat lower. And there are multiple A lenses as well. A lens with a 5-5 or? Okay. Yeah, that's from the smoothing of the temperature peaks. The lens reconstruction, this thing of going around and looking for lensing effect on specific patches, prefers a lower amplitude. Relatively lower anyway.
So you have three sigma 8s. One is coming from temperature alone, one is coming from smoothing of the peaks, and yep. Third is coming from 5-5 reconstruction. Okay? How consistent are these three estimates?
I think there are only two. Okay.
Those two are perfectly consistent with each other.
But the peaks are too smooth.
But the peaks are too smooth.
Okay.
ISW signal or not?
Yeah, that's what that cross spectrum was.
Well, but then maybe I missed looking. So the ISW paper didn't come up with anything better than considerably less than 3 sigma on external mass tracers. What's the significance here? Sorry.
It's about 2.5 sigma.
So this is just consistent.
Yeah, the same measurement is in the ISW paper.
Hi, since you advertised that map as available for cross-correlation studies, as you said, it's very noisy, right? So is there any other information other than that map provided to enable us to actually, you know, evaluate the significance of our cross-correlations?
We actually want to use it.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, so the map comes associated with a noise power spectrum and a beam, just like any CMB-ish map. To properly characterize things, so if you're just getting your error bars at the sort of 10 or 20% level, that's usually adequate. To properly characterize things, because the reconstruction is non-Gaussian, since it's based on the two-point function, you need simulation. And I think we have to talk about this in the lensing group, but probably anybody who asks can get those sets of simulations.
So we're going to go to coffee. I just wanted to make a quick comment on what you just said. So with Wiener reconstruction maps, I always like to have the fluctuation maps just to show what's believable and what isn't. And I think that we'll have that in the next Planck release. So not that that's quite the thing. Okay, we are being pressed to go for coffee, and we will be returning at 4 for the rest of the afternoon session.